what does gutsy mean to you?
Gutsy means to me, just at any given time, whether you're hungry and you haven't slept and you're not caffeinated, or you are just the princess and the pea, happy as a clam, not giving two hoots what anybody else thinks, and always realizing I'm doing my best and it's going to work out the way it is supposed to work out. And that's that.
You're listening to the Gutsy Podcast, where we talk about all things real, raw, and ridiculous about running a business authentically. Whether you need an inspirational pick-me-up or a swift kick in the mental ass, the Gutsy Podcast is your bi-weekly guide to getting out of your head and back into action. I'm Laura Ora, branding and mindset coach for female entrepreneurs, and your host on this journey through entrepreneurship. It's time to fuel your gutsy. If you're working your ass off, can't seem to put down the laptop, and your bank account is nowhere near where you'd like it to be, then this episode is definitely for you. Listen, today's guest, her name is Marley, and she is a spitfire of knowledge, sharing her profound story about having it all, yet feeling depleted, and how she turned all of that around to teach you how to be mindful of your time and make the money that you're worth. Marley Major is the CEO of The Party Goddess, a nationally acclaimed full-service event planning and catering company. From elegance to rockstar fabulous, Marley is known for creating the most talked-about parties of the year, with client lists ranging from A-list celebrities such as Snoop Dogg and Britney Spears to top-tier businesses around the world. As The Profit Goddess, Marley is a top business coach in LA and the author of the book, But Are You Making Any Money? And if you stick around all the way to the end of this episode, you're going to hear Marley's really funny ass story about working with Snoop Dogg. Before we dig in, listen, if your mindset is the thing that stops you, if you talk yourself out of shit before you even get started, if you know that there is more calling for you, but you don't know how to stop overthinking it, then the Mindfuckery Workshop is going to rock your world in the best of ways. In a 5-day period, I'm going to teach you the foundational tools to know how to shift your mindset into the moment. We're also going to get to the root of what's actually happening for you. And then back it up with movement. We're not just going to talk about this shit. We're actually going to start making changes. The next workshop runs June 24th through the 28th and registration is open. So go to lauraora.com/learn or scroll down and click on the link in the show notes. And grab your ticket. This is not the time to start overthinking. If this is resonating, go and do it, because I'm telling you, I've watched it change people's lives. All right, my friend, listen, you're in for a real treat today. Marley is absolutely a spitfire with a lot of knowledge to share with you. So let's get into today's episode. Marley, welcome to the Gutsy Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and get some guts.
Yes, absolutely. We were just pre-chatting a little bit and your energy is so fun. I compared it to a bouncy ball, just like colorful bouncy ball, even just being on your website and watching some of your videos. So I'm excited for the energy that you're bringing to us today.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited to bring it. And even if you weren't excited, I think I would have to bring it anyway. So sorry about that to all of our listeners who are like, I can't deal already. Goodbye.
No need to apologize for who we naturally are, right?
Right.
So I know that every amazing story starts with a backstory. So talk to me about you've got an incredible track record in what you've built and what you've created. So talk to me about what has led you to where you are today. Where did you get started?
That's a great question. The backstory, there's a backstory, and then the backstory has a backstory, and we could be here for, 2 years, just so you know, on the devastating backstories to make everything come together on Instagram and look perfect. But the backstory is I grew up in Pasadena, California, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, and had a very sheltered life, and went off to Georgetown, got into the business school. Nobody knows how, and you will really not understand how by the end of this interview. But I went off to Georgetown and I loved it. And it was the summer after my sophomore year. And I was like, I don't have anything that I really want to be doing this summer. Nothing was like jumping out at me. So I decided that I would try to game my parents and say, hey, listen, I'm going to spend the summer in Paris going to cooking school and having a tutor and living there and, you know, sell this as a very educational idea, which I was able to do. Went to the French embassy and got all this research done and the whole thing. And they were like, well, okay. I mean, it's a little weird, but whatever. So I did that. And then I came back my junior year and I had a business class where I had to do a speech, and it was on a topic of what I knew more about than anybody else. Well, at Georgetown, there was absolutely nothing. I was saying to my mom, I'm like, there is nothing I know more than anybody else. Like, I can barely stand school, let alone how am I supposed to convince these people that I know? My mom was like, just do it on French cooking because there's no way these kids know more than you on that. So I was like, okay, great. French cooking it is. Now, I am so old that we still would develop film in those days. So I was heading to get my film developed and I ran into my professor and just blurred. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in your class and I'm blah, 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 blah. And I'm so excited. And here's my topic. And, blah, blah, blah. And then I said, and I have an interview with the chef from 1789. Well, if you know DC and Georgetown, 1789 is like this very fancy staple restaurant that's been there for a million years. I did not have an interview with the chef from 1789, nor was I used to lying, nor was I certainly used to lying to professors. And I was already thinking I'm going to get kicked out of school for other reasons. This is not probably the best path. She proceeds to tell me that's her favorite restaurant. She's so excited. By the time I go home to my roommates, I'm in tears and I'm just like, how am I going to get this interview? Like, and my roommate used to be a hostess. She said, listen, there's a new chef from New York. He's too new to know that he can say no, right? Because chefs aren't can be notoriously egotistical, et cetera. So I was like, I just need to say that I talked to him so I'm not lying, like on my syllabus or whatever the back stuff is. So I went in and I met him, and the kitchen, in Georgetown, there are like these row houses, and the kitchen is like in the basement. And I took one look at him and I decided I needed to marry him. Well, I was 19 at the time, right? And he was 20 years older and, you know, we had a great job and was an amazing chef from New York, but worked in the bowels of this kitchen. And I was like trying to assess very quickly, A, how I was going to get my interview done, but B, how I was going to convince him to hire me in the span of time, because being in the basement, I would never, literally never see him again. So I noticed that he didn't speak great Spanish. He would not be happy to hear that, but didn't speak great Spanish. And they had souffles on the menu. And I was like, that's my in. I speak Spanish. Well, I will speak better Spanish, I'm thinking. And I know how to make souffles because I just came from Paris. So I do my interview and then convince him that I am this Spanish speaking souffle master. And could I come back for kind of like a follow up interview? I mean, you would think this freaking class was like 60 minutes or something with how much interviewing I needed to do. And he's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So I came back again, this time in full hair and makeup. And I mean, it's so ridiculous in hindsight, but he let me work and kind of observe and talk to him. And then I was just like, well, when can I come back again? Anyway, I did that 3 days a week. I'd get out of school at 2:30 and go 3:30 to 11:30 to work these shifts. And then to obviously try to spend time with him. Well, it didn't work. So then the summer before my senior year, I went to Normandy to cooking school. And the whole time in Normandy, I plotted how I was going to quit. Because by now I'm like his best employee, right? Like I translate for him. I'm clearly the most reliable person he's ever seen because, you know, I'm trying to marry him. So I plot how I'm going to, you know, ruin his life when I quit. So I come back and then I say, listen, I can't, I've got too much my senior year. And he says, oh, okay, would you like to go out to dinner? It's like, yeah, I just spent the last year slaving away and that's all it took. Anyway, I said, sure. So we were got engaged the month after graduation. Now there's 9,000 layers to this story about the girl from a very traditional upbringing in Pasadena coming back with this chef who's 20 years older, et cetera, et cetera. And then I was like, well, if I ever want to see my husband, I'm going to have to be in the restaurant business. And I was close to my family, so I wanted to come back to California. So then we had to buy this restaurant, which was a family friend's. The uncle owned it. We couldn't find a space. Like my mom ended up cutting the deal with him on the church steps after mass. And lo and behold, I'm in the restaurant business. He ran the back, I ran the front. And I was all of a sudden now in the food business, as opposed to being in finance or any of these other things that you do when you're at Georgetown. And that is like where everything started for me being in the restaurant business, but also everything fell apart at the same time. Because I mean, first of all, I was young for my class. So here I am. I got married at 22 to somebody who's 20 years older. Now I'm in this business. My whole goal is to do $1 million in sales or more my first year. I was like, goals, goals, goals. Well, that's great to do $1 million in sales a year, but it is not great if you spend 1.1. Okay. So I missed the boat despite my Georgetown education there. And what happened to me is what happens to a lot of entrepreneurs, right? You have a very difficult time working in your business and then actually working on it, right? So we might be very good at doing podcasts or baking cookies or whatever the foundation of our business is. But then when it comes to saying, okay, I'm now going to stop answering the phone that's ringing off the hook, and I'm going to now stop and go back to my business plan and look at my margins and look at my pricing and all that stuff. I mean, you barely have enough energy to get up in the morning, right? And do what you need to do. So we start having all kinds of challenges, right? I mean, imagine I'm totally focused on sales, and it was like, these are the days before Instagram and social media. So we got a ton of publicity because it was the days before reality TV also. So this is like a great story. But on the inside, I'm freaking out because I know this is like, I'm going in the wrong direction. In some ways, I'm going in a great direction, right? I'm building the brand. I've got the sales. I've got the publicity component. The food is great, et cetera. But I had to figure out how to figure out these cost of goods sold and how to get my overhead down and how to, you know, we had 100 employees at the time. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to be, you know, stay married. And so, you know, when you start having financial challenges and you're both working 24 hours a day, because the restaurant was open 7 days a week, and you are literally on top of each other all day, every day. And then you're trying to figure out how to compensate yourselves for working 24 hours a day. And my genius move was the answer was very simple. And that was just to get pregnant. So I got pregnant because I thought, that solves every romantic issue, right? And financial issues. Why not add another financial burden? And not to mention the fact that I threw up for 24 hours a day for 9 months while I was working 7 days a week. Now I have this child. I'm having financial problems with the restaurant. My husband and I are like at each other's throats. I still have to work. So the baby is in front of the cappuccino machine, right? Because it was noisy. It was like a great babysitter, all that. And I was like, and my dad would always be like, what are you doing? Like, you love, because by then we had taken over we had started a catering company and taken over a banquet operation, all going back to this whole entrepreneurial thing where we all think it's just a sales problem. If I just have more customers or sell more, or then I'll be fine, right? But in reality, it wasn't just a sales problem. That's how I'd gotten into catering and these other things. So now my dad is saying to me, listen, this is ridiculous. We keep getting offers to partner up with other groups. Like, and I was like, no way. I am not doing that. Like, I'm going to look like a failure. I mean, hello, I 100% was a failure 16 ways to Sunday. I was the only one that didn't want to admit it. And then I had a very bad skiing accident. So when I had the very bad skiing accident, now I am in rehab with a like full leg brace and this young child. And finally, I was like, okay, let's partner up. So the restaurant, this other group and I partner up, who we are still partners with to this day. My husband and I end up splitting, although we are still best friends to this day. And I was like, oh my God, I have to basically recreate my life. And so I went off and started the Party Goddess, which is the funniest name ever, because now it's like suits my, you know, noisy personality. But at the time, I was at the lowest point of my life, right? Because my marriage had failed, everything had failed publicly. I was very much before that drinking my own Kool-Aid and very much like, oh, I did $1 million in sales. Oh, I did, you know, I'm only 22. Oh, I'm, you know, freaking shit. And then you realize there are a lot of people very happy to see all of that go very far down. So I was like, what is the biggest name I could come up with. And I was like the party goddess. And I remember being at an industry event when I first started, and I had never said anything other than to my boyfriend at the time, like what the name of my company was. So he's like, come on, you can do it. Let's go to this mixer or whatever. And he introduced me as the party goddess. And I just, you know, in LA and New York, I mean, they're very crowded markets and very, you know, uptight and whatever. And I remember this person just said, the party goddess? Like, what's that? And I remember being so sad and depressed, but I thought, oh, I will effing bury you one day. And literally, that story has stuck with me. And I was just like, oh, hell no. Am I going to fail at this too? So then I went on. But, you know, if you don't solve your foundational problems, doesn't matter if you don't have 100 employees and all this overhead anymore. I recreated the same problems I did with the in the restaurant business because I hadn't fixed the core things about my pricing and about tracking my time. I just still I found myself going in the same direction, and I thought, okay, I was telling my dad, my parents one night at dinner, oh yeah, and I have these celebrity clients and I'm doing, and my dad was like, but are you making any money? Which is the title in my book. But I was like, oh, but no. Are you making, it's a very simple question. Are you making any money? How much money is in your checking account? How much money is, and I realized I am going to be in exactly the same spot again. And so at that point, I realized I had to do something to solve my own problems, but I couldn't be talking about it because everybody was sick of hearing me how everything was going to turn out. And I just had to put my head down and I came up with this system, which then became this system, you know, for my book. And because I had celebrity clients and I actually got publicity for the book, et cetera, which was kind of ironic. And then ultimately I did go on to fix my own problems. And like, it just was a very backwards way and a very long, long way of like recreating yourself from the in so that the inside matches the outside and the bank account matches, you know, everything that it's portraying. So I promise you that's as efficient as I could be with that. But
No,
it's
it's a great story, you know, because you can, I think a lot of people are probably nodding along right now and being like, yeah, I get it. I understand it. Because the one thing that you said that really, really stands out to me is like, if you don't change the foundational problem, you'll recreate it.
yeah,
And I
every
think
time.
that is it, regardless of what the foundational challenge is. In this case, we're talking about money today, right? And if you don't shift that foundational belief, the way that you're handling money, the way that you're using money, the way that you're asking for money, you have the same problem wrapped in a new package, right? And so I'm kind of curious, how did you figure out what your foundational challenge was?
Well, through had okay, I figured it out. I mean, the easy answer is through a lot of soul searching. The bigger components to it were that I am very competitive even with myself, and I was not going to fail, period, end of subject. And by now, I had flown my own balloon so high that, and you know, made some very rough landings that I was like, I am going to pull this off. Like, I have no idea how, but I'm going to pull it off. So what I started doing was when I came up with this pricing system for my, it was literally just for myself. And I have bad ADHD, shocker. And I knew it had to be like in my way. Like, I mean, remember, I got my business degree. It isn't like I didn't take all those classes and know all the accounting principles and all the, I mean, I knew how to read a P&L. I knew how to read a balance sheet. I knew all those things, but I couldn't apply. There was some disconnect. And so I thought, okay, let's take the principles of what I've learned in business school and let's talk about, okay, let's cost of goods sold is the foundation, right? So it doesn't matter if you're a podcaster, it doesn't matter if you're a, you know, you sell surfboards, you sell clothes, you sell candy, or you sell events. We all have cost of goods sold to a certain extent. And then I was like, okay, I've got that. We all have overhead, got that. Then I realized, okay, well, in addition to cost of goods sold, I'm going to say we have another category called forget-me-nots. The reason I say that is because that's like the stuff that gets attached to the cost of goods sold, but we don't think about it. So, for example, if I'm planning an event and I want to rent, and I say to my assistant, hey, get a price on X number of tablecloths. And I say, okay, the tablecloths are $20 each. We need this amount, and it's going to be $1,000. Well, if you don't order them on time and there's a rush, guess what? They're not $1,000 anymore. That the rush fee plus the shipping, now they're $1,200. So I started trying to figure out where was I going wrong? Cause I knew how to do the spreadsheet. Like I would put the $1,000 of linens and I knew how to do the markup, but where was I going wrong? And I realized one place I was going wrong was with these forget-me-nots. Okay, but what else is it going to cost to get this product into my hands? I don't care if it's a $5 tip from the guy who's going to bring it from the parking lot. I don't care if it's parking that you have to pay downtown for $20 to go and pick something up. That is still a cost that I cannot get away with. So I realized, wow, that accounts for a lot. And then I realized, what's the other thing that I'm missing? And that's when I came up with, well, guess what? I'm always working, which is what every entrepreneur says. They feel like they're always working. You feel like you never have time off. You feel like you never are making as much as you should, or as much as you think other people are, or as much as your boss is, if you're moonlighting, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, so how do I account for my time? Because most of us, even in business school, we didn't talk about tracking the owner's time. At no point did that ever figure into the cost of goods sold, right? It figured in maybe to some big overhead thing but it was like, but if I spend 4 hours talking to a potential client who I find out later isn't even qualified to be my client, I've lost those 4 hours. Like, where does that fit into my profit and loss statement? And so when I just kept trying to drill down on where's the money between the wallpaper and the wall, right? Where's the money between what's coming in and what is not ending up in my bank account? Where is it? And I realized it was in the two places, the forget-me-nots and in the time I was spending, because I was spending so much time on things that had no return on investment whatsoever, that I didn't have time for the things that did have a return on investment. Therefore, the waters were really muddied and I didn't know what parts of my business were viable and what parts weren't. And that's what happens to all of us. We have kind of, whether we think of it as different product lines or different services we do, we have different margins on different, even if you're a masseuse, you know, you have different margins on things. And when I split all that up and really broke it all down, that's where I was like, okay, great. But then how do you, and I mean, ultimately I did write the book on it, but I was like, how do you write a book that basically says to every entrepreneur, well, your whole problem is you're not tracking your time. That's it right there. Because you can have the most profitable product in the world, but if it takes you 10 hours to sell it, right, to a client, you could have 100% profit margin, or so-and-so will say, oh, I make this amount. I'm like, yeah, but you do one of those a day and all the rest of your time is getting eaten up. It's not scalable. And that's what I ended up having to do. And so that was and is my secret sauce, is not just your return on investment, like your ROI, but I call it ROT, which is your return on time. Like if you put in, there's nothing wrong with people say, oh, people are wasting time on social media. And my thing is not necessarily. If you tell me, if you're spending, you know, 2 hours commenting on other people's posts and all this stuff, but in those 2 hours, you're sending DMs and you're saying, can I send you my product for free? And can I get an influencer to, that might be the best 2 hours that person spends. But if it's like you're trolling on Facebook and you're fooling around and you start tracking your time and you realize, okay, what came out of that 2 hours of Facebook? Or maybe not what came out of the 2 hours today, but in the last month, how many clients did you get from Facebook or from Instagram or from all that social media? And when you really realize, holy cow, I was spending 10 hours a week on social media and that is not where my business was coming from. My business was coming from referrals who, sure, maybe checked at my social media after, but they were more going on the referral factor, right? Of, oh, we know Marley, she's going to do a great job. She did a great job for us. You should call her. She's fun. So guess what? I should spend my time nurturing those relationships because they don't necessarily care what's happening on my social media. It might to a certain extent. And that's really how I did it. But the reason I say it was long and painful was because I just felt like nobody was addressing the real root of the problem. Nobody was Nobody could help me get out of my head and say, why did I always feel so busy, yet I had nothing to show for it? And I had to just look at for the patterns where it was like, yeah, okay, well, you spent 3 hours doing this and you spent three, and really only this activity right here, this 20 minutes, is really the only activity that got you more business. And so then it, you know, went down to, okay, how do you substitute this activity for this activity, that kind of thing.
Got it. So for everyone that is, again, nodding their head saying, yeah, I'm busy. I'm working around the clock. Yeah. I feel like I'm constantly doing stuff, but it's definitely right. not reflecting in my bank account.
Yeah.
What do you recommend that they do first? How do you
Very
start switching
simple.
That?
Just track your time for a week and pretend you're a lawyer. And then I'll always hear all kinds of excuses. You know, do you have to do it on an app? Do you have, I'm like, if you are a pencil and paper person, I am, I'm very tech savvy, but I'm a pencil and paper person too. If you have to sit there with a piece of paper and you write, you know, you get up at, and you sit at your desk at 8:40, and from 8:40 to 9:10, you check your emails, start very basically, check my emails. 9:10, you know, you get a client call or potential client call. You write that down. Okay. 9:10 to 9:30, boom, boom, boom. And you just literally write down all your activities like you're a lawyer. And you do that for a few days and you look at it. And it is so obvious where the problem is, because you just go, you start tallying it up. And it's like me, you realize I spent 10 hours on social media. There's no way. I got, like, what could I do if I substituted those 10 hours with my highest level activity? Well, for me, one of my highest level activities would be doing a podcast, right? Because then I get all these listeners that you've spent all your blood, sweat, and tears, and I just show up and you tell them, hey, listen to her, go. And it's like free marketing, right? So what if I did, instead of 10 hours of social media, what if I did 10 hours of podcasts a week? Imagine. And these are people who are going, I'm getting a third party endorsement. I mean, you can get into all the marketing reasons why this makes sense, but you substitute 10 hours of what's not really paying off at all, or is certainly negligible, to 10 hours of just hitting it on the podcast circuit. You tell me how many more books I'm going to sell. So that's what it's about. It's about, you track your time and then you identify those at least three time sucks that would be the most easy to replace. Like, my family always would make fun of me because I never wanted to get the car washed. I never wanted to do errands. And they'd be like, you're so high maintenance. You're so, and I would say, no, I'm not. It's not a good use of my time for a couple reasons. One, if I go to the supermarket and I drive there 15 minutes and I'm there 30 minutes, I drive home 15 minutes. First of all, I'm only going for a few things. Second of all, I have bad ADHD, so I forget half the things I'm going for. And I end up with magazines and chocolate chip cookie stuff and everything else. So now I've spent a ton. And now I'm just off in my own little Disneyland, very hard to get back to, you know, what I'm trying to do. But if I substitute that hour for, hey, listen, I'm going to start pitching you on podcast ideas, or I'm going to say, hey, listen, can we do a blah, 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 a social media thing together? Or can we do a, that hour I can knock out so much. So it's about replacing low for high. And what's so tricky and powerful is it takes very little to start turning the wheel in your favor. Because remember, you're taking a time, you're intentionally taking something that's a time suck and going and replacing with a high level of activity. And so the answer is, well, now if I have to pay somebody to go to the market, or I have to pay Instacart, well, the way I look at it is, hey, listen, if I can get the equivalent of $500 worth of business in an hour by pitching podcast people, and this costs me $30 an hour to have an assistant do it, guess what? My return on investment is $470. That is very significant. There are very few things where I could make $470, right? So, but it is very much about, you got to just put that whole thing down of, but I'm so busy and nobody else can do it, and nobody else, and I am not the one to say every activity should be delegated. It shouldn't. But when you track your time, and then, you know, my coaching clients show me their time, I'm like, you are not even smart enough to lie to me about how you spent your time, because This is ridiculous. You know full well that driving to pick up something and, quote, just running an errand, or I will, quote, just do it myself, it isn't just the 30 minutes or the 45 minutes. First of all, it's the brain time that you're just exhausted and annoyed, because these are never fun activities. There's always traffic. There's always somebody, you know, being annoying on the road, blah, blah, blah. So you're getting depleted, and you don't get to do the stuff that you're really good at. So, right. But we have to be able to totally change our mindset, because we only feel like we're being successful if we are busy. We do not feel like, if you could have the most profitable year of your life, but if your brain isn't like educated in the way to say, yeah, the most profitable year of my life. And I've had this now. I didn't work as much as I have in the past, because I'm very purposeful about what I do. And I am no longer going to just say, sure, I'll go fly to that conference. It's just Northern California, and then I'll come back tomorrow or whatever. No big deal. Well, what's the big deal is that it is basically 2 days I'm giving up, and I'm tired, and I'm this, and I'm that, and all the other stuff that's going to pile up on the runway while I'm gone. So it's very much a shift. And the ones that just take it and run to the bank are the ones that are really willing to listen and look at, get feedback on how they spend their time. And really are willing, you know, really willing to change.
One of the things that I hear the most out of people that go through the Mindfuckery workshop is, I cannot believe how quickly and clearly I got answers. So many participants message me and they're like, I can't believe we got to the root of this. Like, I really truly understand now, and now I know how to move forward. Listen, when there is no clarity, when you're not sure, when you're in that gray space, of course it's hard to know what to do next. And not to mention, when your brain is telling you all these terrible things and talking you out of it, you put those things together and it's no wonder you haven't been able to take that movement forward yet. In the Mindfuckery workshop, we break all of that down, we rebuild it in a way that works for you, and you have the clarity to know what to do and where to go. And did I mention this is live? Like, it's me on the other side. We are in this together, an amazing group of women. So if you are ready to get out of your own way, to get clear on what the hell has been holding you back all this time, then go to lauraora.com/learn, register for the workshop, and I'm going to see you really soon. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of, and I've been in the same boat of just the habit of being busy.
Correct.
Right? You're just being so stuck on equating success, ability to grow, you know, achievement with busyness. And when we stop being busy, it's like, what's falling apart? I'm not going to get this. And that's that inner work you were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's the reframe. That's the, yep. Those are the old beliefs, stories, habits. Right. That we have to rewire and release, because what do you want to do? Do you want to keep being busy and not making money? Or do you want to start to rewire the stuff, go through what I call the temporary discomfort?
Yes.
And then actually start to not only free up your time, but also be really happy when you log into your online banking.
Yeah. And feel like, and people, you know, this whole thing of like getting paid what you're worth and all that stuff. Well, the only people I know that feel that they're getting paid what they are worth are the ones who are off the hamster wheel. I mean, tell me somebody who feels like they're being paid what they're worth. You know, they're have to get on a plane and they're constantly late for meetings and they don't feel they're getting paid what they're worth. The ones who feel like they're getting paid what they're worth are the ones who are very confidently, as a lawyer, most lawyers are, let's say, $700 an hour, and they're saying, I'm $950 and I don't give two hoots if you know I have the results to show for it. You want it or you don't, no worries, but you're going to put me up at the Four Seasons when I come into town to meet you. And so all these things are non-negotiable. Those people are paid what they feel like they're worth. Because they have had that conversation, and some of it is maturity and experience and all those things that go in to it. But where you just say, no, totally fine if you don't think I'm worth it. But I know I am. And I know a certain segment of the market knows also. And that's the market I'm going to go after until something changes and I realize, okay, I've got to, you have to adjust. But you being scattered and frantic and just moving for the sake of moving is I don't give a hoot. I mean, every time you know how there are certain people that you talk to, and every time they're like, it's like they're jumping from one crisis to another. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
kind of like their hair is on fire and they're this and they go to, and I always now in my head, I'm just like, dude, I hope you don't have a mortgage. I mean, you better, your house better be paid for in cash. None of those cars better be leased because, dude, you are putting in the time. So I hope to God you've got the results, because there's no way in hell I would trade that level of chaos.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because that charging what you're worth thing comes up a lot. How do you price your worth? How do you, I mean, in that, I know that that's a very broad question and there's a lot of different factors and industries, but how do you begin to even put a dollar sign on what you are worth?
So to me, it's actually relatively easy. Yes, there are components that come in, right? But the first thing that I do is whether I'm coaching myself, like now going into this whole new division thing. And so I have to figure out how do I price my product versus other products or my service. So the first thing that I do is now is I do my homework and I do kind of an analysis, like a competitive analysis, like you do in a certain segment of the business plan, which is, who else is operating in this space? Who are my direct competitors that are basically going to do pretty much exactly what I'm going to do? Yeah, they might not have my personality, but at the end of the day, we're both car mechanics who are doing this and this and this. Okay. So I want to know who are my competitors? What are they charging? And for what services and stuff? And then what are they doing well or not well? And where is my unique selling proposition or my secret sauce going to come in? Okay, so then that way I can change the game a bit about how I price. But I always want to start with what is the world used to paying? Then I want to say, okay, could I, then you want to decide how do you want to be? I mean, you can still be making tons of money, but be making it on volume and be the lowest priced person out there. That's not where I feel most comfortable because I don't love the I'm the cheapest and I've got to rely on volume. For me, I'd rather have much less volume and I don't care that I'm the cheapest, right? So some of these things are like, where does your personality skew? Then you very much see what is the market, what will the market pay? And then you get into, okay, if I am going to go head to head with these competitors and I'm new and they've been here for a million years, guess what? You're going to have to do some kind of promo or something to start not stealing their customers, but to start getting some market share. So are you going to go less? Are you going to give them extra services? And then I would ask myself, what can I do? Because remember, you can double your income if you become twice as efficient. So if it takes 1 hour to do something that I can get done in half an hour and charge the same amount, and I can keep finding some tweaks there. So that's how I set my pricing. The other thing I take into consideration is how much do I want to make and how much am I willing to work? Because those are two key things that you've got to factor into the equation. So if, most people say, oh, okay, I work 52 weeks a year and I want to make, I'm making this up, $240,000 a year. Okay, well, A, depending on what state you live in, 240 could be 120. If you're in California, 240 could be 160, And then, but then, are you working 52 weeks a year? So, no, you don't divide by 52 because we all know you're not going to work the week, not you, but what I'm saying, potential person. Are you really going to work the full week between Christmas and New Year's? Are you really not going to take any vacation in the summer? Are you not going to take a long weekend? Are you not going to take? So you have to be very specific and boil it down to what time frame am I really going to work? Is it really going to be like 49 full weeks, right? Then you get more granular. Well, how many hours a week am I willing to work? And everybody will say 60. Well, you try to do 60 hours a week consistently. The wheels start falling off the bus very quickly. And then you just basically you get down, get down, get down, and you come up with, okay, this is how much I need to make per hour. And maybe you sell one huge project a year. and that gives you your hourly rate. Maybe you sell surfboards at X amount, and that gives you. So your pricing is not only determined based on what the market will bear and your unique selling proposition, but then how much are you willing to put in it?
Makes
So
a
it's
ton.
that recipe.
Yeah, it and I love pointing that out. You because it's not just about like sitting down and picking out a number. You have to one know all the costs of business and running and all that stuff, but also looking at your life goals, right? What do I actually want to make? How do I structure this in a way that it works for me so that I don't end up in a place where now I do have to work 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week to be able to achieve that financially, right? Like you have to structure it in a way that works for you in all different aspects.
And what is on paper, you still have to acid test it, right? I mean, there were times when I live in LA, I would fly to New York for a TV interview. I'd take the red eye or whatever, I'd get there, do a TV interview for something live, and then I'd fly right back because I had to, right? It was a last minute TV thing, it was a national deal. I didn't want to give it up. So I did it. Really on paper, right? I was only gone a day, but do you know how much that takes on your body to fly from LA to New York, sleep a few hours, get all hair and makeup and ready to do what you're going to do, and then fly back. And then it isn't just like you slept in your bed and now you're ready to attack the rest of the week. So what it looks like on paper. So try to do that twice a month and still do your other stuff. You're not, it's not going to fly. It's like you sort of set the framework and then you go test it out and then you go, hell no. And like, I'll give you a great example. A very good friend of mine just got, and all of our friends were like, oh my God, it's so amazing. She beat out all these people to get this job. And she's from LA and had to move to Seattle. And this has only been a couple weeks now, but she was going to get paid $1 million a year and all this stuff. Well, I saw her this last weekend. I don't give two hoots if she's making $1 million or 10 million. And for me, this is saying a lot because believe me, I like to make money. But this poor woman is now, her family is still here. So on paper, it sounds like a husband will just come up every other weekend. She'll just come down every other weekend. But she's like, I worked all week. Then she's like, you know how it is. So-and-so says, let's go have drinks. Let's go have dinner. So she said, then I had all those dinners and drinks 4 nights, 4 or 5 nights. Then I had to fly to LA Saturday morning, be back Sunday night so that she'd be fresh for her job Monday. And then, oh, by the way, the time the husband is supposed to come, they still have two teenagers at home. Well, who's going to do the shuffling for the baseball and the, and I was like, no way. I don't, there is no way. At this stage in my life, I don't care what kind of prestige, I don't care what kind of that you would get me to just be getting on and off a plane Saturday morning to Sunday night and then having to be so quote on all week. And if some huge company's paying you $1 million a year, I was like, well, can you work from home? Like, can you work remotely? She's like, no. Like they want to see her rump in that chair.
Wow.
And I was like, nope. So there are these other components that you have to take into consideration. On paper, she and the husband should be able to work this out flawlessly. It all fits, right? She technically can fly. Oh, she can work on the plane. Oh, she can sleep on the plane. Have you tried to actually do that
Yeah.
consistently? It is the quality of life is zero, in my opinion.
Well, absolutely. And I'm thinking too, you know, not just the physical toll that it takes on the body, the mental toll that it takes on the mind, but the fractures that that puts in a family. You know what I
You're
mean?
correct.
Like that is not a sustainable way of life. You know what I mean? And I think that everybody can do hard things for a period of time, but as you're ongoing lifestyle. I mean, you really got to think about, you know, how much you walk around praising this badge of busy. What kind of fractures is that putting in your life?
And by the way, even if I mean, it isn't going to be for that short amount of time. She has to become a resident of a different state. You know what I'm saying? You just don't kind of do that and then undo that. And there are all these other components. So kind of the wrap up and the bow is there are the ask ChatGPT, how do you determine, you know, where you're spending your time? And ChatGPT gives you the answers, but then you also take your personality and your ChatGPT answers and you actually go and try to do it.
Yeah.
And then you come back and it's like, say, course correct. And then you go, no. I technically might be able to drive from here to here, but that's if there's no traffic, there's never an accident, I don't run into trouble at TSA, blah, blah, blah. And then you rework your plan or you rework the number you're trying to hit or you up your margins. And that's typically where people's pricing changes is they go, oh yeah, no, I mean, I'll do it, but I need to be making a lot more money
Yeah,
to do it.
for sure. You know, I think that everything that we're talking about today, the thing that's really standing out to me is you really have to, you've got to be willing to know and own your own shit.
Yes.
And I think that we try to make it way more complicated than it needs to
Oh,
be.
no.
You know, we get in our heads and well, what about this? And what about at the end of the day, all of this, every single thing that you've shared with us today is about knowing and owning your own shit.
Yeah.
And being willing to do it or not do it, to ask for it, to change it, to shift it, because otherwise it will continue. Nothing will change unless you change it.
It's like painting a house white that's full of termites. Well, right, day one, sure, you vacuumed up the termites outside, you painted it white, you're good. Maybe you could even keep it looking good for a week, but you didn't get rid of the termites.
Yeah.
You ha are going to have just a whiter pile of termite dust, but the problem has not been solved. And the other thing too, just on your point of like owning your shit and owning is it's finally getting to the point where you're like, and by the way, I don't care that somebody else would be fine with it and I wouldn't, right? Like,
Yeah.
for example, for me, I'm a total morning person. I do not know what it is, but I hate appointments late in the day. Will I do them sometimes? Obviously. But I don't, and some people are like, oh, but just do it at 4 o'clock and then, you know, just go to the dinner after. I'm like, I don't want to. By that
Yeah.
point of the day, I have already talked, communicated, put out so many fires back and forth, 16 ways to Sunday. I don't want my time from, I mean, ideally 2:30 on to have anybody else's say in it. Now I might jump in and say, hey, do you want to get dinner
Sure.
that night? Because I feel like it. But the more stuff I have planned out, and yet I have friends who are like, they've got to have it all planned out from now till Christmas. I'm like, knock yourself out. I'm just no longer willing to do that. And I don't know why I am that way and you're that way. Because before I would spend so much time trying to figure, why can't I just do it the way Joe? Why can't I just be happy in an office from 9 to 6? Well, I cannot. If I
Yeah.
don't change the rooms I'm working in and the spaces I'm working in and get cappuccino entering my system at a certain time in the day to free up some new creative neuron, it doesn't work. Period. I cannot produce.
And that ownership of self, accepting the way that you are, the way that you function, the way that you thrive, one of the most liberating things that anybody can do. The more I always tell people, like, it's not hard being you. What's hard is all the things that you're doing to fight being who you are.
100%. Now, I would still say, full disclosure, many times I say it is hard being me, especially to my kids, but you are correct. It is much easier to be the real you and accept the real you, and then, you know, don't try to get the salmon to swim in a different direction than those freaking salmon naturally want to swim. Sometimes you have to, you know, sometimes I have to work late and have, like yesterday, back to back to back to back to back, where I just get home and I am like, but I also know it was intentional. I did it. And I also know the one thing I've learned is, but I'm not going to have 3 days in a row like that. Like if
Right.
I did that, I'm going to make a conscious choice that guess what? The rest of the days in the week, they are going to go very much how I want them to go. Because if they don't, guess what? Then I'm cranky. My brain is not firing with the ideas that normally would be so easy for me to come up with. You could say, give me 5 ideas right now to get new customers and da da da. And I'd be like, boop. You ask me that tonight at 4:20 after I've done all these, I'll be like, F you and your customers. I don't care. And Why would you even ask me? Right? It's just amazing. It's like the equivalent of eating, having these conversations when you're starving and tired and over-caffeinated, or having them, with the 3-year-old who hasn't had a nap.
Right.
It's like it's just a totally different person.
It really is.
So, but you got it. You have to know very clearly how you're wired.
And the only way to do that is by trial and error, right? You can't sit and map that out. You can't perfectly craft it out.
No.
You figure it out. You notice like, oh, when I did this, I felt amazing. Oh, when I did this, I felt completely drained, right? And just taking note of that, getting to know yourself, and then integrating that more and more each day. That
And then,
that's all it has
right,
to be.
and then stopping asking, but why do I feel that way? What so and so can eat bananas and it doesn't upset their stomach, and I really love bananas and I want to keep it. That is where I ended up spending a lot of time. Like when you go to school with very, very smart people all the time, and it's like, why can they go out the night before, study, cram the morning of, ace the test? And here I've had a tutor, I've been at it for a week. It's because I learn totally differently. But if you said to that person, we're going to go live on a TV show in 5 minutes, here's what you're going to talk about, they would projectile vomit and faint,
Yeah.
right? Where I'd be like, okay, yep, what you got? Like, am I doing the lighting myself too? Or no problem. So we have to figure out what our gifts are, and then once we know, we got to just sort of, put down beating that horse. It's like, to a certain extent, you just stop asking, why can't I? Why don't I? Why, don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Marley, you are a wealth of knowledge, my friend. And
Thank you. Well, this was so fun.
I love a good deep conversation about real shit that we're all experiencing. And real quick before we go, because I have to ask this, and this is a I just need to know this for myself. How in the
Sure.
hell did you work with Snoop Dogg?
Well, it's hilarious because I, okay, so it just amazed. Well, I'm laughing because every time I think of the Snoop Dogg Martha Stewart partnership, I just give everybody in life so much credit because those two seem to be so opposite to me. And in my case, it was very, well, I shouldn't say it was very simple, but it was relatively simple because there was a person that could be the intermediary, right? Because I naturally, when things do not stick to a schedule, I mean, listen, I can be fly by night. I can give room and schedules, but bless him, Snoop Dogg, smokes a lot of pot and things start running late and they start running very late. And when you got a lot of pot and it's running very late and you have a lot of other people starting to use pot, you start running out of food and you start, and that's where it now starts affecting me. So it's like, I, in certain scenarios, it just goes to, you manage yourself how, and as long as somebody else could have those initial converse, not initial, I shouldn't say initial conversations, those conversations, and then kind of filter it back to me so I could come up with the plan, it's great. But otherwise, I want to just be like, get short, you have people out there waiting. And you can't. So you just, okay, you go and make this work. And to be beneficial for everybody, but could we put down the bong just for a minute so we can get this party started and then everybody can go back to what they're doing? But otherwise, I've got 250 other people here who are not amused.
My gosh. Just hearing this story, this is the kind of shit like you wouldn't even know that that was happening somewhere one day, right? Like I could, when you were doing that, who knows what I was doing? Maybe at the grocery store or maybe watching a movie. And
Right.
meanwhile, you're like freaking out because all this party is getting derailed. But for Snoop Dogg, like, I don't know, it's just the perspective
Right.
on
And
stuff is so bizarre.
then the other components that are also happening, like I also have to, I'm also in my mind thinking, this is great that it's going late. We have a strong contract that says if it goes past this, these vendors are gonna, but you then have vendors who, like a band, let's say, who's committed to another event. So things can only start going so late before you really start to have huge problems that even the tightest contract really can't protect everybody, because you want Snoop to enjoy smoking pot, but it at some point everything will fall apart. I mean, you can't keep people waiting 8 hours. That is not gonna fly for the most part. So it's like this constant balance of me to be good at my job, I have to be super detail oriented and very have the agendas and all that stuff in my mind, but I have to also have a huge amount of flexibility that says, yep, okay. And then I'm going to be a spin doctor over here explaining to these people, you know, what we're going to be doing. Even maybe that's ordering dominoes. I don't know. But you dance for a couple different masters, and if you can figure out how to do it without looking like the biggest witch on the planet or totally losing your mind, you know, you win
Then you win.
most of the
Amazing.
time.
Marley, where can everyone find you? Where can they connect with you online? I know that somebody's going to be like, I need more of her in my life.
Thank you. Well, the best thing ever, of course, is if you go to my Instagram, The Party Goddess, 2 D's, 2 S's. Or I would love, love, love if you would go to Amazon and get a copy of my book, But Are You Making Any Money? That would make my year. And then tell us how you like it.
Amazing. We'll make sure that we link both of those in the show notes. And Marley, I got to know, what does gutsy mean to you?
Gutsy means to me, just at any given time, whether you're hungry and you haven't slept and you're not caffeinated, or you are just the princess and the pea, happy as a clam, not giving two hoots what anybody else thinks, and always realizing I'm doing my best and it's going to work out the way it is supposed to work out. And that's that.
And that's that. It's gonna work out. It always
Gonna work
does,
out. It's
doesn't
all
it?
gonna be okay, baby.
It's all
Might
gonna
not
be
be the okay
okay.
that you thought, but it is all gonna be okay.
Yes, so true. Hey, I have to thank you so much. Thanks for bringing your energy, your wisdom, your story. Super inspiring and lots of great things to take away. I really enjoyed this with you today.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And I hope we get to stay in touch.
Absolutely.
Okay.
What a powerful and also enlightening and enjoyable story to listen to, right? Like Marley just really reminds us that we have to get to know who we are and we have to be willing to be that version of ourselves. It's when you do that where everything starts to change for the better. I'd love to hear what your takeaways were from today's episode. So come find me. I'm on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. I am at that Laura Aura. And as always, until I see you next time, stay gutsy.